acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 84, Asymmetrical Cast-On, Sunday, August 2nd, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from the rehearsal space of Bovine Social Club in beautiful, sunny Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, off the shelf, and so forth. Welcome Cookie Lady Knits, who is Heidi from San Francisco. She recently introduced herself on the welcome thread on Ravelry. And I'd like to say a special hello to Ichigo Knitter and Saratoga Knitting. That's Sophia and Lisa of the Ichigo Abroad podcast. I saw them just this past Friday at Cafe Lena in their hometown of Saratoga Springs. Bovine Social Club has been on a little mini tour this past week. They played Nectars in Burlington, Vermont, and then Cafe Lena in Saratoga Springs. That was actually the third time they've played Cafe Lena, and Sophia and Lisa were so kind to come out and see the show, and we got to chat a little bit. I was responsible for the majority of the driving on this mini tour, so I didn't get any car knitting done, but I did take along one and only one knitting project, which is the Blom shawl by Melody of the Bee Mandarins podcast. I really enjoy this knitting pattern, and I was able to simply print the chart and follow it and got quite a bit of knitting done. Since the yarn I have is more yardage than what is called for in the pattern, I have made plans to add an additional repeat of the flower stitch into my shawl and hopefully still have enough for the bind off. And that's where I am in the knitting right now. I'm working on an additional repeat, and I also plan to add some beads to the picot edging. Hopefully that will just be a few days away from completion. Before departing for Vermont, I was able to complete my goal of spinning up some hobbledehoy batlings in the folklore colorway on my Jenkins Turkish spindles. So I both spun and plied these batlings on Turkish spindles, and I was participating with the Jenkins Yarn Tools team for Tour de Fleece, which ended at the end of July. And I was also able to complete the three-color cashmere cowl, a pattern by Hohi Locatelli. Mine was an eight-color silk and wool cowl, but I managed to follow all phases of the pattern with my knitting, even though I didn't have as much yardage and I switched colors more frequently. This three-color cashmere cowl is a very simple, relaxing, and kind of an addictive knit. I really enjoyed using my hand-spun yarn to knit this. I think it's a really versatile pattern. It would make a great gift, and it has enough interest in the instructions that there's always something new for you to do but it's not very taxing or complicated. So I think as far as spinning battlings is concerned, which I love to do, I love to spin those hobbledehoy battlings, but it's a really good project for the end yarn. I'm not sure yet whether I'm going to be keeping that cowl for myself or whether it will become a gift, but in any case, it's incredibly beautiful. As far as my stash dash goals are concerned, I have elected to compete in the 5K. That's 5,468 yards. To date, I've completed projects totaling 4,553 yards, which leaves 915 yards to go. The Blom shawl will use up about 600 yards, just over 600 yards. And I hope to complete one more project before August 14th and the close of Stash Dash. That will allow me to meet my Stash Dash goal. The Front Porch. Yesterday, August 1st, was the official start date for the second annual Asymmetrical. This is an asymmetrical craft along where you can knit, crochet, sew. You might even use some woven fabric to create a garment or accessory that is asymmetrical in design, construction, or use of color. This craft along will extend until September 30th, at which time you're welcome to keep crafting along, but I will close and lock the prize threads. And if you have managed to enter a finished project or projects by that time, you will be a contestant for one of a few fabulous prizes. So I have unlocked the finished object thread. So as you complete projects, you can post them in there. That's also where you can see photographs of the fantastic prizes and find out which generous listeners have donated those prizes. I will draw for prizes during the first podcast I release at the beginning of October. So that's when winners will be announced. There's also an asymmetrical planning thread that is open for any kind of chatter. You can post photographs of your works in progress or links to patterns that you will be working on or maybe that you recommend. And that's where all of the chatter can happen. I think it's so interesting that just as we begin the Asymmetrical, asymmetrical fashions have been in the news a little bit. It seems like designs of that description are quite popular for fall. So not only can you have the benefit of taking part in the Yarns at Yinhu craft along, but you'll also have something in high fashion just in time for fall. I think it would be interesting to combine your knitting or crafting for the Asymmetrical, perhaps with the Pantone Colors of Fall knit along that's sponsored by the Yarniacs. And on their website, you can see a little more information about what colors are forecast for fall. And they're also interested not just in a completed finished object, but a whole look that you put together, an entire outfit that's something fashion forward and ready for fall. So it could be a good combination if you're looking for an additional challenge. For my part, I have decided to knit the folded lace tank. It is a pattern by Bristol Ivy and one that I've been considering for quite a while. I think it's something that can take me from late summer into fall. often at the beginning of the year, I'm still wearing the same kinds of things I wore at the end of the school year because we don't have a completely air-conditioned facility where I work. And so some of those September and even early October days can be quite warm. This folded lace tank is based on the idea of a Greek garment. So it's slightly A-line in shape. And on one shoulder, it has a series of folded fabric. And inside the pleats of those folds is a thin column of lace. I haven't knit a Bristol Ivy pattern, so this will be my first. And the yarn is something I'm pretty excited about because I bought it on very, very deep discount at my local yarn store, Mountain Knits and Purls, in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. And it is a silk linen blend in the colorway Lupin. This yarn is from Knit 1, Crochet 2. It's called Soy et Lin, which I assume translates silk and linen. A very nice blend, and the Lupin colorway is a gorgeous soft lilac with just some pops of other bright colors, and that I think those pops of color are silk content that's been added into the blend. I have 3 skeins, which is a total of about 900 yards, and seems plenty for knitting the folded lace tank. I've read a lot of project notes on Ravelry indicating that the garment was a little bit bigger than anticipated, so I think I will probably be knitting the smallest size, and then based on a gauge swatch, I'll decide, you know, what my needle size might be. Likely I will go down a needle size or two because I do not want this to be oversized. I don't mind it being a little loose and flowy about the waist, and I think this silk linen blend will have quite a bit of drape to it. It's not really meant to be a fitted garment, but I don't want it to be sack-like either. So I'll do a little bit of experimentation with the gauge swatch, and my goal will be to complete this pattern along with Blom, the shawl, by the end of Stash Dash on August 14th. There is still so much holiday knitting that I have not done. I have plans, I have lists, I keep seeing new patterns and thinking of family members, very knit-worthy, deserving family members for whom I would like to knit those things. But so far, nothing. So I guess I will be rushing to the finish with a lot of other knitters and racing to complete projects by December 25th. I really don't like to operate that way. I like to use my summer to get a lot of gift knitting done, but this year it just didn't work out that way. I've been very excited to knit things that I want for myself and just really motivated to get that knitting done. Ever-expanding skill set. Recently, I worked on expanding my skill set with pattern design by entering a design contest. And I learned at the end of July that my design idea was not accepted for the contest. It was still really a worthwhile endeavor because I worked to a timeline and I completed a sketch with dimensions and also sketched out how the design would look when worn. And all of those things were things that I had never done before. So it really did stretch my abilities. And it also left me with a two completed shawls, and a pattern design idea that I can publish. So I'm looking for a publication date for this new design for October 1st. And I am also interested in a few test knitters for this design, maybe two or three test knitters. So I'll say just a little bit about the design, and then you can send me a personal message on Ravelry if you're interested in test knitting and if you feel confident that you can meet the deadlines that I have set. I would like to release the pattern on October 1st. So I plan to have a complete written pattern by August 15th, and I will send it to test knitters. And then I would like those test knitters to complete their knitting by September 15th, so I can use the rest of September to make any changes or adjustments and get the final pattern prepared for publication. The design is an asymmetrical shawl design. It requires about 600 yards of fingering weight yarn in two different colors. I think two contrasting colors would work well, but of course the fun of inviting test knitters is to see the different ways that they interpret your instructions and what those finished projects end up looking like. So I am completely open to experimentation. Color A requires about 400 yards and color B about 200 yards. For my test knitting, I used not only contrasting colors, but I used two different fiber contents of yarn, both in fingering weight. So I used Quince & Company Tern in Barnacle for color A, and I used the Finch in Nasturtium for color B. So there was not only a color contrast, but also a little bit of a textural contrast in the yarns that I used. I used US size 6 needles to get the gauge that I was looking for. So depending on your individual gauge, you know, probably US size 4, 5, or 6 needles would be appropriate for this pattern. And if you have interest and you feel like you can meet the deadlines, I can send you a PDF with a little bit more information about the design and what it will look like right away, because I have that prepared already. And then this week I plan on finishing up the written pattern so that I can get out to test knitters by August 15th. This would be a great knit along for the asymmetrical. And you can feel free to, you know, share some of the photos of your test knitting. I plan to publish this very soon, so I don't mind if you're, you know, revealing a little bit about your knitting and what it looks like as you're working on it. Again, if you're interested in test knitting for a new design, please send me, Sarah Pomegranate, a personal message on Ravelry. And let me know, and we'll work out the details. Off the Shelf. Yarns at Yinhu listeners are reading along with a book called Color, A Natural History of the Palette by Victoria Finlay. Over our mini trip in Burlington and Saratoga Springs, I continued reading the orange and the yellow chapters in this book and found a really interesting excerpt that I would like to share with you that has to do with synesthesia and particularly the relationship between color and music. It's interesting to me because I've spent the past couple of days really immersed in music and sound and what's happening with Samuel's band, Bovine Social Club, on the tour. They played two venues with very different profiles, and even though they performed some of the very same songs at each venue, they sounded completely different because the space and the demands of the audience were completely different. So this excerpt is from the chapter on Orange, and in my paperback copy begins on page 196. The relationship between color and music is a strangely entwined one. Sometimes people use the same language, words like color, tone, shade, and harmony, to describe both. In Brave New World, Aldous Huxley imagined a future where people would go to concerts to experience scent and color instruments, where each note transmitted enticing smells of sandalwood and other perfumes and projected pictures onto the ceiling. Huxley was not looking to the future, but was laughing at the present. In 1919, a Danish singer, Thomas Wilfred, designed the clavelux, a combination word like megilp, combining clavier with light. It involved dreamy transmissions of colored light projected by revolving mirrors. His dream was that every household would have one, and in 1910, the Russian composer Alexander Scriabin wrote an entire composition, Prometheus, for a color organ. His technology was even more basic than Wilfred's. Scriabin's composition was basically written for a musical instrument attached to a piece of wood and a few light bulbs. But there was little to compare it with, and the composer was excited. It provided a chance for him to explain a relationship between color and music that was clear to him, yet which most people did not understand. Scriabin was a synesthetic, which meant his brain made connections between things that the majority of people do not believe to be fundamentally connected. Synesthesia can take several forms. People can see colors in pain or letters of the alphabet, but Scriabin saw music and heard colors. The Finnish composer Jean Sibelius had the same gift. "What color would you like your stove, Mr. Sibelius?" he was once asked. "F major," he said vaguely. So it was duly painted green. Scriabin would incidentally have seen F major as being dark red. His green stove would have been in the key of A, and that is probably part of the problem with designing synesthetic instruments. Nobody can agree what color goes with which note. If I were Scriabin, for example, Il Cremonese would be visually singing to me in G. If I were Isaac Newton, it would be the color of D, and if I were George Field, the violin's orange would be my F. If there is indeed a direct relationship between music and color, then every lucky individual who can perceive it is tuned slightly differently. In this chapter about orange, the author Victoria Finlay explores quite a bit about the Stradivari violin, with it's sometimes called the red violin, but really the color is a deep and vibrant and sort of a dancing orange. And there's a lot of myth, legend, and folklore having to do with the methods that were used to obtain that vibrant color on the violin. And so quite a bit of the orange chapter is focused on that. Finlay also includes some details about using madder to dye things. Sometimes people talk about madder being the way to obtain a red dye, but it really is more like pink or orange. And I'm just finding this read fascinating. I think it's also interesting to think about connections between music and color. I don't know how much of a synesthete I am, but sometimes certain tones or the richness of particular pieces of music do bring a very vibrant color, very specific and very vibrant color to mind. Do you have that experience? If you do, I would love to hear about it. Or maybe you just have associations of color with a different piece of music or a different location or setting. Synesthesia isn't only a connection between sound and color. It is a term that we use to describe connections, unusual types of connections between the senses. In its most extreme, it can sort of hijack the sensory experiences of a person and be almost debilitating. Sometimes folks with this syndrome or condition will experience a very strong taste in the mouth, and that can be so severe that it's difficult to concentrate on anything. But other times we simply have a few particular and fleeting connections between things. We might only get a glimpse of it or get the sensation of it for a few moments, but it's nevertheless incredibly powerful. So I'd love to hear about it if you experience anything like that. I know that Paula of the Knitting Pipeline podcast explored this idea a little bit in one of her episodes. It's been a while since this episode aired, but I remember being very intrigued by the idea and fascinated to find it come up in this summer read-along. And so forth. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to devote some long segments of time to sewing projects this summer. I love the immersion method of sewing. And most recently, I completed my second schoolhouse tunic. I had this idea that I would use some of the leftover brown linen from my first schoolhouse tunic, and that for the skirt, I would use this beautiful piece of printed linen fabric. And this linen has a directional print with gorgeous pink, orange, and red flowers, and also a crane in two different poses. And it pulls in a little bit of the brown gold tones as well. So I just thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to have this schoolhouse tunic with the brown bodice and then the skirt with the pattern, and then maybe I could use a little bit of that beautiful pattern fabric for the facings as well. And, you know, I was just all kinds of excited how I would pull this off until I began to lay out the pattern pieces for the skirt onto the printed fabric and realized that I really didn't have enough fabric. So I tried all different ways, you know, almost like figuring out a puzzle. I tried all different ways of positioning the pattern pieces onto the fabric so that I could get the front and back of this skirt to work. And I thought I had it, but then I realized, oh, This is a directional fabric, and the cranes on the back of the skirt will be upside down if I do it this way, so that's not going to work. What I ended up doing was I did trim off a few inches of the pattern pieces, because the first time I made this pattern, I really thought that the skirt was a little bit too billowy, and I could afford to have maybe larger seams, deeper pleats, or I could just reduce the dimensions of the pattern overall and have a little bit less fabric on the skirt. So I did that, and I cut down my pattern pieces, which are on a relatively thin but still pretty substantial interfacing. So I cut them down, and then I transferred the markings so that the folds for the pleats would still work, etc. And then I took the fabric, which is, I don't know if it was 54 inches wide apparel fabric, but in any case, it is wider than 45 inches of, that's typical for quilting cotton. So rather than fold the fabric in half and then put the pieces on the fold, I folded each selvage end edge in from the outside. But I didn't fold it symmetrically. I folded it so that one piece, the front, is a little bit narrower than the back. And that allowed me to maneuver and adjust until I just had enough fabric to cut out both the front and back pieces. And actually, I had to do it so that my seam was along that non-printed selvage edge, which you can see inside the garment, that I had just enough. But I felt very proud of myself for doing that. And then I didn't really have enough room to put the pattern pieces for the facings as they should have been directionally. But I maneuvered them, since this is a very even woven fabric. I maneuvered the facings so that they were horizontal. And then I just made sure that only the floral design and not, you know, an upside down crane foot was showing when the facings were exposed in the finished garment. This time when I was sewing, since I had a very clear idea of how the entire pattern would come together, I was able to be much more deliberate. I feel like my seams are much more successful, and the entire garment is a little more polished, a little less awkward when you look at it from the inside. So I'm really pleased with it. I wore it while we were on holiday, and even though it has 3/4 sleeves, the linen means it's very breathable and cool, and it just felt like such an accomplishment to wear something that I had worn. Of course, I celebrated this accomplishment by shopping for a little bit more fabric while I was on holiday, and I visited Nido, N-I-D-O, a yarn and fabric store in Burlington, Vermont. It's on the second floor. It is a beautifully curated shop with amazing competitive prices on fabric and yarn. I had been looking and thinking about fabric, looking at designs of fabric online, but reluctant to make a purchase since I don't have a lot of experience with weights of fabric or fiber content. And I was just unsure, you know, what would be the drape? What's the weight of this fabric? Exactly how large is the largest pattern on this fabric? And et cetera, et cetera. So I really wanted to be able to see some of these designs and shop for them in person. And at Nido, I found prices that were competitive with what I saw online, a great sale selection, as well as new designs and, you know, 2015 lines of fabric. And so I bought three different fabrics, enough to make two staple dresses and perhaps another top or a skirt. And my next endeavor with apparel sewing will be the staple dress. I purchased the paper pattern when I was at Pearl Soho in New York a couple of weeks ago, and I'm really eager to try out that pattern. I was given a few tips by the staff at Neato. First, that the sizing on that pattern runs very, very large. And I was also encouraged to make the garment without pre-washing the fabric, because it runs so large that, you know, little bit extra shrinkage that will happen with the fabric when it sort of comes together and its first washing would be a nice way to finish the garment, which is great news for me, because that's always one of the trying steps. Is I'm all ready to sew something and then I realize, oh, I haven't pre-washed the fabric yet. So I think I will try that in sewing the staple dress. And then there's another pattern that I haven't purchased, but it's kind of on the front porch for me. I think it's really neat. It's called the Dottie Angel Frock. And I like it because it can be made with pieces of different fabrics. It looks nice with sort of like a patchwork idea. So that could be a great way to use up leftover fabrics and to play around a little bit with mixing and matching patterns. So that could be on the horizon for me, maybe with some of the leftovers. I also purchased a pattern for a tote bag by Anna Maria Horner at Neato, and I purchased some yarn from Dirty Water Dye Works. Neato stocks quite a few colors and weights of Quince and Company yarn, as well as other independently dyed yarns. They have sewing classes there. It was just a great experience to visit that shop, so I highly recommend it if you find yourself touring around in Burlington. Also on this trip, to enhance my involvement in sewing and making garments, was a suggestion for an audio podcast that I received from Kay Connors. The podcast is called Thread Cult. I've listened to two episodes on the way up, and both were just incredibly informative and interesting. And in each, I also got an idea for a title for maybe a future fall-winter read-along. In one of the episodes, the particular one that Kay Connors recommended, there was an interview with the woman who had researched these dress doctors who helped women find flattering styles and colors in the era of the dress. You know, when dressing up and wearing a dress was just something that every woman, regardless really of income or occupation, you know, was thinking very carefully about how she looked. And, you know, there was some discussion about how we could benefit a little bit from thinking along those lines today. The other episode I listened to was the most recent, and it featured an interview with Rebecca Rehnquist of Dropped Cloth Designs. I recently talked about her embroidery workshops book, and oh, she was just delightful and informative as well. If you are interested in expanding your listening to some sewing and sewing design podcasts, I enthusiastically recommend the Thread Cult podcast. I will put a link to that, as well as many of the other things I talked about during this episode in my show notes, and notes and photographs can all be found on my blog, yarns@yinhu.com.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.